Hello and welcome back to another edition of YCT Matters. This is Carol Platt-Liebau, the president of Yankee Institute, and because we are the eyes, ears, and voice for you across Connecticut, Yankee Institute today is bringing you our Director of External Affairs, Bryce Chenault, and our Manager of Research and Analysis, Megan Portfolio, and of course, the author of the extremely popular weekly Hartford Portfolio. And we are going to give you an insider look at the first week of the legislature and a little glimpse at what lies ahead. Don't be frightened. Don't take a drink. It's okay. We're going to let you know what we have to anticipate going forward. And so, Bryce, Megan, thank you all for joining us on YCT Matters.
Great to be here.
Hi, Carol.
1 week down. How many to go?
Ugh, it's not even been a week, and I feel like Travis Kelce yelling at his coach, but it's actually me yelling at my computer.
Okay. Well, with that colorful analogy, we'll continue on. And so let's talk about the first week of the legislature. It's open. Yankee Institute had its Family Education Day on the opening day. And our tax credit scholarship bill, along with the Connecticut Center for Educational Opportunity, has already come to the Finance Committee, it looks like, Bryce.
Yeah, it's exciting to see. We'll have to learn more about when there'll be a hearing date on it. But the opening day was a really exciting one. I think we had a great presence up at the Capitol. We had interactions with policymakers from both chambers, from both parties, members of the Lamont administration and his team. And it was a really positive day. I hope we'll end up seeing people wearing our little pink pins because they're colorful, and why not? It's a great concept and idea. Opportunity scholarships, let's go.
Right.
And we're looking forward to building on the early success, and hopefully the Finance Committee will pick up the topic. And speaking of dates, you had mentioned how long do we have? So session will end May 8th. And prior to that, any bills that will want to have a chance out on the House and Senate floor for a vote will need to get out of committee by the final committee dates, which, depending on which committee you're part of, that'll be in the end of March to early April time period.
And before we move on, I think the important thing for people to understand about our opportunity scholarships is that what they do is they would offer people, rather than just a tax deduction, a tax credit if they give money to a scholarship granting organization. And these are targeted at low-income families, low-income children, and it offers them an opportunity to go to a school that they and their parents select. And this is really important. You know, scholarships of up to $2,500, just that tiny amount, can change the whole trajectory of a child's life. And it means that they're not trapped in a failing public school. And the other takeaway from that is that, you know, it takes nothing from the public schools. So if you hear people who are pro-union, pro-teachers union, pro-whatever, you know, yelling about something defunding our public schools, no, it doesn't. It is entirely privately funded. It requires nothing from anyone that, you know, funds the public school, no public money at all. And in fact, you can even argue that per capita, it increases the amount of funding left for those who remain in public schools, even though, as our recent study in partnership with CTCE showed, there isn't necessarily any causation or any link between the amount of money spent and positive education outcomes. You know, no one can say that this in any way defunds public schools.
Most importantly, was that last point that you made there too, is that at the end of the day, it's going to result in improved outcomes, not only for the kids that will have the opportunity to go to a school that will, you know, meet their unique needs, but also the students that stay in the public schools that perhaps they depart from. But all students will win underneath the policy like this.
Yep. And that's what they've seen wherever. Public school students, it makes things better for them, and private school students. So at any rate, that was our education day. What else do we have to look forward to while the legislature is in session?
Well, this is the really annoying time of session where there really aren't too many bills out yet. What the committees do is they just put out an agenda with a bunch of concepts, and it's just the committee's job to vote concepts out of committee to get bills raised. And then they also create these things called placeholders with fun titles like a bill for working conditions, which they use to later on if things don't go their way during the committee process. It could kind of throw language into these bills, totally ignore the public hearing process, and just bring it out to the floor for a vote. So it's just really frustrating for me to watch it because it just kills me, the lack of transparency in this process. But what I do know is the gas car bans is on the agenda, but I haven't heard anything yet. It's been really, really hush hush, but I know, they're working on it behind the scenes. So, I mean, I'm refreshing my screen like daily to see like when the new bills pop up, just to, make sure we're paying attention to that. But another thing that is really interesting and really scary is the environmentalists have been working behind the scenes with lawmakers on what they call the 2024 Omnibus Client Bill or something boring like that, which I've retitled the Green Monster Bill, because it's so far nothing's been released to the public. We have a bill number. It's going to be HB 5004. We don't really know what language is included in that, but things that most likely will come to fruition is moving towards 100% electrification for new construction and for new home remodels, which is really scary because Eversource during the public hearing for the gas car ban was saying, hey guys, if we do all electric cars, I mean, that's going to probably run around $2.4 billion just for new substations and upgrades to the grid. Now figure in all electric construction for homes and remodeling. I'd have no idea how they expect that to work. They tried doing this out in Washington State. And the interesting thing is, it's not interesting, it's really sad. Home prices have been gone up about $7,500 just with all this electric components, like these heat pumps. So we're already having a problem in Connecticut with affordability and housing. Now you're proposing to make new housing even more expensive. I don't know how that's going to address any of the issues that we're having with the housing crisis that we're being told about. Another really awful, awful, awful thing I anticipate being in this bill is something that they tried to pull last year, where they wanted to make the commissioner of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection basically the supreme ruler of the environment, and would give that person the power to create regulations, get involved in interstate PACs, with amongst, the 50 states and provinces in Canada. So basically, she could do or he could do whatever they want, totally ignoring the legislative process. They can do things like get involved with a TCI. I think we called the bill the TCI on steroids last year. So it's the green monster, and I call it that for a reason. But once that gargantuan piece of legislation comes out, I'm sure it's going to take me a few days to get through because it's going to be so long, but we're going to be watching that thing like a hawk.
Yeah, and
Oh, go ahead,
just
Bryce.
curious because Meg had done a very nice write-up on it and taking information that was publicly made available by proponents of the legislation, which is obviously totally fine by them. And because Meg did that, some legislators decided to pen an op-ed, I guess being antagonistic towards both her and the Yankee Institute. But something I found curious is that they said, well, nobody knows what's in it, but then they also simultaneously said it's practical, necessary, timely, and achievable. I'm not quite sure how one would know those details without there being details made available on what the bill is. And, to add on to a couple of the points that Meg made there, one of the accent points, one of the focuses will be expanding green jobs, as they call them. So there'll be a new green and vitalized, there'll be extensive jobs in the green sector. It's curious that that same exact claim was made when the Renewable Portfolio Standard legislation was
Right.
passed in Connecticut in 1998. And which is a great, political argument, right? Like, we're going to have jobs, this is going to be great. Much like what we do with stadium subsidies. So when Meg called it the green monster, I couldn't help but notice the baseball analogy there, along with the legislative response. And just like tax subsidies for all of these building of professional sports stadiums don't bear out in economic data for that all the politicians claim that they will. I think the same will be true for this bill, where there will be all these new jobs. And do the parallel to the RPS mandate, that resulted in, I think, 4% of the RPS approved energy being generated here in the state. The vast majority of it occurs elsewhere in other states and in other countries like Canada.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really remarkable because Megan was talking about the fact that they lump all of this in a bill, and then they also put in charge the deep commissioner, and they empower someone who is not elected, who can't be removed, and who is essentially a bureaucrat, and puts that person, male or female, puts him or her in charge of negotiating interstate treaties, sometimes if it's with Canada, it's an international treaty. And this is the whole problem with whether you want to call it bureaucracy, whether you want to call it the administrative state. It's a huge governance problem for a representative democracy. People have no way of actually having a voice in who is effectively legislating and who is making policy decisions that have a real world impact on their lives.
Yeah, and these decisions, you know, if they're done at the, you know, the deep level, I mean, these are all discussions happening behind closed doors. I mean, there is access by the public, but it's not as accessible as, you know, dealing with our senators and representatives. I mean, they're out in the community. They answer to us. Like, they don't have that kind of accountability, you know, having these bureaucrats make these decisions. So it's all of these things are done behind closed doors. The average person is working 9 to 5, coming home, making dinner, carting kids off to, you know, whatever sport activities. I mean, it's just all being done behind their back. It's just disingenuous. And I hate lack of transparency. It's one of my pet peeves.
Well, it is. And, you know, it is very interesting because sometimes it's almost as though the lack of transparency, the obscuring of the information, it isn't a bug, it's a feature. You know, it just makes governance so difficult that people give up. And, you know, it isn't the way that any kind of representative democracy where power rests with the people is supposed to be run.
Amen, sister.
And at Yankee Institute, that's part of why we're here. We're here to be your eyes, ears, and voice, and we're here to peel back the layers of the onion and keep you informed. And that's why we are very grateful that Megan is on CT1 practically 24/7. She does like to occasionally eat, bathe, sleep, and take care of her rescue dogs. But otherwise, she is glued to that channel. And you do read every piece of legislation that comes out of the Capitol every year during session, Megan, and it's impressive.
Oh, yeah. And I was half joking when I said I refresh my screen. I like at about 5 o'clock, I'm like, where are the people in my household? They're like, what are you yelling at? I'm like, where's the bills? They haven't posted them yet. I get so excited. I want to read them.
We are grateful there are people like you out there, Megan. And you are a tenacious watchdog indeed. And so, Bryce, tell us, you know, you spend a lot of time at the Capitol, especially during session. What are you expecting in regard to committee hearings? What's going to be getting underway?
Yeah, there's definitely committee meetings up and happening right now. This, you know, just a couple of days ago was a full House and Senate session day on Wednesday, and a great day to run into policymakers from across all political backgrounds and across the state, which is great. And there'll be a lot more bills on the docket. You know, there's already been dozens introduced. In fact, the governor, following his budget proposal amendments and State of the State address, I believe, Megan, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was 21 bills that are legislative priorities for the governor this session, and he's introduced a number of them in both the House and Senate. And a couple of them that I had noticed that were of interest. So there was a reduction and this is part of the budget change too, reduction in occupational licensing fees. This picks up on a theme that Yankee Institute worked on last year, which was trying to support legislation that would have capped fees at $100. That was introduced by Senator Ryan Fazio this past session, and I'm sure it's a topic he wants to work on this year as well. And this one would reduce it for specific fields. So it's not an across the board reduction, but it gets at education licensing, childcare licensing, nursing licensing, which is good.
It is. It's important. You shouldn't have to pay in order to work.
Yep. And it'll hopefully help us attract people. One idea that, you know, maybe we could get more popular here too, is if you have a license in another state, let's give you an easy on-ramp into the state so we can attract you as a talented worker in whatever field you might be in to come to our state as well.
We're like the 17th most burdensome state for occupational licensing. And that really hurts women and people of color. So, I mean, I would love to see them, you know, make it easier for them to start a business and start a career. However, our friends in big labor have publicly come out and stated that they will oppose any regulations that make it easier to get occupational licensing. I don't know why they're against, you know, helping people get a job, but they've publicly come out and said they oppose it. And they've done that in the past. We've tried to make it easier for our vets and the spouses of our military. And they just come out against it. It's like, you say you're for the troops, but then you do everything in your power to stop them from, you know, they did their time, they did their service to this country. They want to come back to society, get back to work. And they're literally an obstacle to them to do this.
It's shameful.
Yeah, the labor union lobbying on that topic was actually, I spoke to a lobbyist that works on that on opening day, and they told me exactly that they would be opposing it. So it's definitely there.
Well, you know, they ought to rethink that, because it is absolutely shameful. So let's just do a quick refresher as we wind up here. For our friends and listeners who are interested in tracking some of these bills and knowing when bills of interest are coming up and they might want to testify, how does someone do that?
There's a number of ways you might be able to do it. Most directly, you could do that on CGA's website. They'll always have the material posted there. But
And what is that web address? Or you can do it through Yankee. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, cga.ct.gov. And if you go there, there's a number of different ways to look up the bill you might be looking for, whether that be by committee, by legislator, what have you. And we could certainly, if anybody had questions or concerns about that, please contact Yankee Institute at any time. We'd be happy to walk you through that. Your unique request might be different than someone else's, so I don't know that I could answer all of them right at this moment, but there's always available there. The website is actually good, I think, in my estimation. But also, Yankee Institute will be doing again this year legislative alerts, where ones that Meg and I think are, you know, really important and that we think our folks should weigh in on. We're going to make sure you have an easy avenue to do just that. And we want to encourage people to contact their legislators, to sign up to testify when those moments occur, and all the rest.
Yeah, because, you know, it can't be said often enough. It is amazing the impact your voice can have. Six letters, six comments, six outreach. I mean, that makes an impact on state legislators. And when you speak up and you make your voice heard, you make your views known, legislators listen. And together, if we are able to aggregate our voices and we are able to make our views known, it absolutely made a difference. And it prompted the governor to withdraw the electric vehicle mandates. Together, we were vastly outspent, but we stopped the TCI on steroids bill. We stopped tolls. We have done a lot of things when we work together, even when we're outnumbered, even when we're outspent. When we work together and we're nimble and we're strategic, we can get the job done.
Yep, absolutely. And I definitely agree with that sentiment that you expressed at the beginning there, Carol. Don't think that your voice goes unnoticed. You know, use it. Politicians they listen. They do.
And we are happy to help. We are your resource for doing that. And when we put our voices together, we are able to really make a difference. So don't be shy. Keep alert. Make sure you're reading the Hartford portfolio and looking for Bryce's alerts, and we will make the change happen together. Anything else everybody should know? Megan, Bryce, what should I ask that I haven't asked?
Well, you haven't asked me about the Labor Committee.
Oh, well, you got to tell us about that. I mean, we got to leave everybody a little high on outrage, Megan.
I call it the WWE of the General Assembly. That committee, man.
There are some colorful personalities on that one.
I mean, it's already started. I mean, the first meeting, they're already out the gate. Let's give unemployment insurance to people that choose to walk off the job and go out and strike. The proposal is so preposterous. Gavin Newsom, California, vetoed it. So we got going on.
Too far left for Gavin Newsom, but just right for the Connecticut.
You know us. We just want to be the California, the East Coast for some reason over here. They have also put in a bill to make it mandatory for all companies to provide paid sick days. And that was also coupled with a bill by Governor Lamont. So expect to see a big push on that this year. Right now, only companies with 50 or more employees are required to give 40 hours of sick day. They want to expand that to everyone. So that means like the little coffee shop or little retail shop that you go to with two or three employees, you know, they're going to come in with these mandates, and it just doesn't make sense. Like these small businesses, their workers are family, you know, and if they don't treat them like family, they go out of business very quickly. But they like my parents own a small business. That's their family. I mean, they get Christmas presents, they get bonuses. When they're sick, they always accommodate because they're family members. And for the government to come in and do this, it's not just the fact that they have to give the days, but they have to keep perfect records of this and the days accrued, the days used. And if they don't do that, they can face fines from the Department of Labor. And that's just not fair to those guys. And then they're also want to take the bartenders and servers who currently get under minimum wage, but they do get tips. And if they don't make the hourly wage of minimum wage with their tips and their normal hourly wage, the business owner has to make up for that. But most cases that doesn't happen. These servers and bartenders work their butts off and they're making a ton of money on tips and they deserve it. Well, the Labor Committee thinks it's a great idea. Let's put them on minimum wage. Okay, so how is that going to work for these poor guys? You know, they're bringing home a couple hundred bucks a night. People are already getting, you know, exhausted with the tipping. Everywhere we go, there's the tip this, tip that. Like the reason why we tip them is they don't make minimum wage and they provide a great service and we don't mind paying for it. But if they're making the minimum wage, it's happened elsewhere. Servers are seeing their hours cut. Restaurants are closing and the servers aren't making us much money. So it's like these bills, they think you're doing a good thing, but you're really hurting people.
Right.
Sad. Yeah, this one fair wage concept is it's very strange. It's, you know, the people that are pushing it, it doesn't make any sense why we would listen to them on this, but it's been tried elsewhere. I was actually down in Washington, D.C. when a proposition went through on it. And I think maybe most telling, if you just go ask people that work in this industry if it's what they want, the answer is a resounding no. And it seems to ignore the fact that there's already a state statute that requires anybody in a tipped wage who doesn't make minimum wage at the end of their pay cycle, they get compensated by their employer to make up that difference.
Right.
So there's already a requirement in place that ensures this happens to no one. Secondly, the people that work in this industry, average pay is much, much higher than the minimum wage. We're talking $25, $30+ an hour. Kind of depends. Even your local diner person working on tipped wages, that average person is making in excess of $20 an hour, well above the minimum wage. And all this will do is have a negative effect on employment for the very people it's proclaiming to help. And it's going to cause massive headaches for restaurant owners who have very small margins to begin with. You're talking like 1%. And the idea that we would just come in and do this to them, you know, when you see restaurants closing where these policies have been adopted is foolish.
We have beaten these things before, though. They've been proposing them the past few years and we've been fighting them back and we're going to keep doing it.
Absolutely.
And we need your help. So stay tuned, read your Hartford portfolio, check the Yankee Institute website, and by all means, make your voice heard.
Yeah. And I also just wanted to make a point of there's been broad consensus around the fiscal guardrails over these last few months in particular, but the last 5 years overall as well. And a commendment to the governor's team that has supported these, the Republicans and Democrats who have supported these, a unanimous vote in support of them. It's helped putting debt down here in the state. It's helping taxes come down for the first time in forever. And I think it's sending the right business signal to businesses to come here to Connecticut. And I hope that will continue to accelerate and grow because we need it. It's long, long overdue here.
Bryce, Megan, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to count on you to keep your ear to the ground and kind of hold everyone at bay there in the Capitol. So thank you for joining us. That was Bryce Chenault, our Director of External Affairs, and Megan Portfolio, author of The Hartford Portfolio, Yankee Institute's Manager of Research and Analysis. And we are grateful to you for joining us. This is Carol Platt-Liebau. We count on having you with us again for another edition of YCT Matters.
I'll show you around this place I call home.